Jamunathiravan Shahim Jamunathiravan Shahim Jaihasa Madhava Kunja Vihariya Kunja Vihariya Jaihasa Madhava Kunja Vihariya Gaudiya Premanande Hari Hari Om Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahans Pariva Ajakacharya Astotra Sattva Sri Shriman His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Rajgratar Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai C.C. Rukmini Dwarkadish Ki Jai Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani Ki Jai C.C. Gornatai Ki Jai Gaur Premanande Glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So it's Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 19. And the Lord begs charity from Bali Maharaj, verse number 41. Paragriktim apunam, puragriktim apunam vaha. Aksaram yatta om iti yad kinchit om iti bruvyat tena richeta vaipumham bhiksave sarva om kurvan nalam kamena chatmane Parariktim apurnam vaham Aksaram yattan omiti Yadkinchit omitu bruyat Tainam rich cheta vaipuman Bhiksave sarvam om kurvan Nalam kamena chatmane Paragriktim apurnam bhaam Aksaram yattam omiti Yadkinchit omiti bruyatn Tena richeta vaipuman Bhiksave sarvam om kurvan Nalam kamini chatmane
Tena rishena vai bhuvana
Iksave sarvatam purvam nalankam nityatmane parariktam apurvam Sarva sarvam purvam kalam kamena chatmani. Anyone else? Para, that which separates. Riktam, that which makes one free from attachment. Apurnam, that which is insufficient. Ba, either. Aksaram, this syllable, yat, that, tat, which, om, omkara, iti, thus stated, yat, which, kinchit, whatever, om, this word om, iti, thus, bruyat, if you say, Tena, by such an utterance, Rityeta, one becomes free. Vai, indeed, Puman, a person, Bhiksave, unto a beggar, Sarvam, everything, Om Kurvan, giving charity by uttering the word Om. Na, not, alum, sufficiently, kamena, for sense gratification, cha, also, atmane, for self-realization. Translation and purport both are quite lengthy. The utterance of the word Om signifies separation from one's monetary assets. In other words, by uttering this word, one becomes free from attachment to money because his money is taken away from him. To be without money is not very satisfactory, for in that position one cannot fulfill one's desires. In other words, by using the word Om, one becomes poverty-stricken. Especially when one gives charity to a poor man or a beggar, one remains unfulfilled in self-realization and in sense gratification. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Maharaj Bali wanted to give everything to Vamanadeva, who had appeared as a beggar. But Sukaracharya, being Bali Maharaj Bali's familiar spiritual master in the line of seminal succession, could not appreciate Bali Maharaj's promise. Sukaracharya gave Vedic evidence that one should not give everything to a poor man. Rather, when a poor man comes for charity, one should untruthfully say, "Whatever I have given you. I have no more." Hare Krishna. It is not that one should give everything to him. Actually, the word Om is meant for Om Tat Sat, the absolute truth. Omkara is meant for freedom from all attachment to money, because money should be spent for the purpose of the Supreme. The tendency of modern civilization is to give money in charity to the poor. Such charity has no spiritual value, because we actually see that although there are so many hospitals and other foundations and institutes for the poor, according to the three modes of material nature, a class of poor men is always destined to continue. Even there, there are so many charitable institutions, poverty has not been driven from human society. Therefore, it is recommended here, Bhiksave Sarvam Om Kurvan Nalam Kamini Chatmane. One should not give everything to the beggars among the poor. The best solution is that of the Krishna conscious movement. This movement is always kind to the poor, not only because it feeds them, but because it also gives them enlightenment by teaching them how to become Krishna conscious. Therefore, we are therefore opening hundreds and thousands of centers for those who are poor, both in money and in knowledge, to enlighten them in Krishna consciousness and to reform their character by teaching them how to avoid illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling, which are the most sinful activities and which cause people to suffer life after life. The best way to use money is to open such a center where all may come and live and reform their character. They may live very comfortably without denial of any of the body's necessities, but they live under the spiritual control, and thus they live happily and save time for advancement in Krishna consciousness. If one has money, it should not be squandered away on nothing. It should be used to push forward the Krishna conscious movement so that all of human society will become happy, prosperous, and hopeful of being promoted back home, back to Godhead. The Vedic mantra in this regard reads as follows. So the verse, the purport ends with this mantra. Should I read it? Yeah, okay. Paragva etam ritam aksara yat etam om iti yat yat kinchit om iti akhatrayavas maitai rikshite sayat sarvam om kurvam ritshat atmanimsa kamebhyo nalam syat. Hare Krishna. End of purport. Om Agyan Timirandasya Gena Jena Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Dena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Saptitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadanti Swam Padanti Kam Vandeham Shiguro Shiyuta Padagamalam Shigurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sarvadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna, Karuna, Sindhu, Dinabandhu, Jagatpate, Gopesha, Gopika, Kanta, Radha, Kanta, Namostute, Tapta, Kanchena, Gaurangi, Radhe, Brindavaneshwari, Prikhavanu, Suti, Devi, Pranamami, Hari, Priye, Vancha, Kalpa, Tarubhischa, Kripa, Sindhu, Pevacha, Pratitanam, Pavane, Bhyo, Vaishnave, Bhyo, Namaho, Namaha, Shri Krishna, Chaitanya, Prabhu, Nityananda, Shri Advaita, Gadadhar, Sivasari, Gauda, Bhaktavinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare, Srila Prabhupada ki jaya. So, money's the honey. That's what they say, but there's also bees around the honey, so it's a problem. So here, it's kind of like Pali Maharaj has been approached by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's very charitably disposed. And he's always inclined to give charity, especially for those who are brahminically inclined or of the brahminical class. And so the Lord is approaching him, and not simply to beg charity, but to take everything from him. This is the Lord's program. And so Bali, very true to his brahminical charitable nature, and very much attracted to the Supreme Personality of God, who came in a most amazing form. A small little boy, more than 12 years old, dressed in a deer skin, carrying a little begging pot and a little staff. And he comes into this amazing assembly where there's all this puja is going on, so many sacrifices. And everything stops. Everyone turns their attention upon the appearance of the Lord, because he's... there's so many qualities that the Lord exhibits which are very attractive or completely attractive. But for devotees and people in general, practically, his beauty is the most attractive. And in this particular incarnation as Vamanadeva, he exhibited that beauty to the ultimate, what we say, perfection. No one could not look at anyone at anything else but that little Brahman boy who walked in. And therefore, you might say everyone was mesmerized by his presence, but at the same time, joyful to see such a personality. Now, Bali, all he wants to do is serve this personality. So he offers him whatever he likes. The Lord is thinking how to take Bali's wealth away, which Bali had stolen from Indra and the demigods, in such a way that it would purify him. Not just take the wealth away, but to also bring him to Krishna consciousness. And so, he said, just give me 3 steps of land. Bali said, you're so small. 3 steps? Practically, he was somewhat insulted by such a request. A very wealthy person, if you ask him for something insignificant when he so charitably wants to offer something that is very pleasing or something that's very satisfying, feels a little bit slighted. And Bali was. He says, 3 steps of land? I could give you an island. I could give you your own planet. I could give you all the wealth and whatever you ask for. It's not a problem. In so many words. The Lord said something interesting. It's really interesting what he said. He says, one who is not satisfied with what he needs will never be satisfied. It's an interesting statement. It's actually the principles of happiness. When one is satisfied with whatever is necessary to keep body and soul together, and to engage nicely in devotional service, that is perfection. To fall either way, below that or over that, makes life somewhat of a struggle. Because you struggle to maintain, you struggle to get more or to maintain whatever you receive, And so tension is diverted from the goal of life. So the Lord wanted to teach that principle, that if you just get what you need in order to live, that's perfection. After repeatedly requesting the Lord to take more, finally Bali said, okay, take your three steps. But the Lord did something amazing. He expanded into the size of the universe. And in two steps, he took everything but Bali. Now, before this happened, Sukracharya, Bali's guru, seminal guru, he says, you know, this is Vishnu, and he's going to take everything away from you. So you shouldn't do this. This is what this particular statement here says, that one should not risk everything of one's assets and wealth simply to give charity to poor people. So is that a principle of absolute understanding? It's not. Because on the material level, it works. Because if someone is asking for something, then you may offer something, but not beyond that. Not in such a way as it causes you discomfort or some, as it says here, poverty. But in the spiritual sense, it's different. In the sense that Sukracharya is talking from the material point of view. He's using this kind of logic in order to convince or to somehow awaken his disciple to the fact that you're going to lose everything and it's not a good idea. But, you know, Bali doesn't care at this point. He's so inclined to give charity to the Lord that he simply ignores his spiritual master. Of course, this is another point. But the point here is that to give in charity to the Lord is actually giving real charity. Why? Because everything belongs to the Lord. Here, the statement Om Tat Sat is mentioned. In the Bhagavad Gita, it explains what this means. That when one performs an act, in order for that act to be purely offered, this mantra is chanted and as a awareness of what is about to be offered. Om simply means for the Supreme. Tat means without any personal concern for one's own gain. In other words, free from personal gain. And Sat means to please the Lord, for the pleasure of the Lord. So that's the complete mantra for offering, whatever. And here it's mentioned in terms of monetary offering. So this is mentioned here that by offering this, then the offering is complete. But you know, Sukracharya is saying, you know, don't say this mantra, then you're finished. So Bali, he doesn't care. And he cares, but he cares in a different way, not the way Sukracharya is. He wants to somehow satisfy this personality. And then the Lord, in two steps, takes everything. And Bali's happy. But the Lord gets heavy with him. He said, you promised. You promised me three steps, and you only gave me two. You're a thief. Well, when someone makes a promise and falls back on the promise or can't fulfill the promise, it's mentioned in this whole section, that's the worst form of sinful activity. Mother, it says, maybe you've already probably went through that section, that there is no greater sinful burden upon the earth than a liar. Right? Nobody likes a liar, right? If somebody does something wrong, just like so many of you are parents, right? So if you have children, and they did something wrong or something naughty, and they lie. The fact that they did something wrong is that's a problem. When they lie, oh, it's the worst thing, right? Then you want to punish, you get really heavy. But if someone does something wrong and says, I'm sorry, this is, you know, they tell the truth, and those who are in the position to, you know, to act will feel some compassion, some concern like that. That's the nature. But when someone lies, that's the worst thing, right? This is what is mentioned here. There's no greater burden upon the earth than a liar. So Bali now is being accused of being a liar. He's accused like that. And he's done everything he could to satisfy this Brahmin boy who now appears as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he's done nothing wrong. He's acted perfectly. And still he's being accused. Why? Because the Lord wants to do something else. He's not so much interested in taking everything back from the demigods. Because what will the demigods do anyway? They have some position. So they need to control the universal affairs under the guidance of the Lord. But they're also attached to wealth. They also have the attachment for opulence. They're generally, the demigods are what we say, karma misra bhaktas. They still have this desire to enjoy the position of demigods and the wealth that comes with it. So the Lord is not so much inclined to just reestablish their wealthy position as he is to bring back Bali Maharaj to the position of pure devotional service. So finally, and this is the interesting part, you know, Bali can't think of anything to do. And now the Lord really gets heavy with him. He calls Vasuki, the mystical snake, and he has him tied up as a criminal. Imagine. He didn't do anything wrong, at least apparently in this situation. But he's being tied up as a criminal. And he's just bewildered. He doesn't know what to do. He's happy, but at the same time he's being accused of, you know, telling a lie or going back on his promise. So then Prahlad Maharaj comes into the assembly. And Prahlad Maharaj is the grandfather of Bali Maharaj, whose father was Virochan. And so just by the presence of this great personality, Prahlad Maharaj, Bali starts to understand everything. So this is also significant. In order to please the Lord, it's the mercy of the pure devotee that makes the offering pleasing, or it makes us aware of actually how to please the Lord. This is actually the process. So by the mercy of the great souls, one gets the mercy of, or the understanding, how to engage in devotional service in such a way that the Lord is pleased by that service. So here, when Prahlad Maharaj comes into the assembly, he recognizes and offers respects, although tied up, to his grandfather. And as soon as he does that, in his heart, he's aware of how to act. This is also very significant. As soon as one honors the pure devotee, then everything becomes auspicious. Everything becomes righteous. Everything becomes, what we say, clear. Because by their mercy, everything happens. And then he understands, oh yes, I still have one place that you haven't taken a step. It's called my head. So he says, just put your third step on my head. And this is what the Lord is waiting for. And at that point, he surrendered his whole life to the Lord. And therefore, he is known as a Mahajan. He's one of the 12 Mahajans. He's qualified to teach the process of pure devotional service. Because he surrendered everything to the Lord. That's the quality of Bali Maharaj. So here, we might speak a little bit about what is the nature of wealth. Wealth is Lakshmi. And when Lakshmi gets in the hands of the materialist, she changes her form into an expansion of herself called Durga, or even Kali, maybe Bajra Kali, more fierce. So those who try to enjoy the wealth that is available in this world through various means become implicated by that wealth. In the fifth, In the 11th canto, the story with the Avanti Brahman, there's an understanding of how there are 15 negative, what we say, characteristics that come with excess wealth or attachment to wealth, such as envy, anger, cheating, lying, enmity, greed, so many things. So wealth is like, it's Lakshmi, but in the hands of the materialists who use it for sense gratification or to cause difficulty for others, it becomes something different. But a devotee knows that wealth is meant to be used in the service of the Lord, because everything belongs to the Lord. Out of all the attachments or forms of pride that a personality may develop, such as the pride of learning, the pride of, you know, beauty, bodily beauty, the pride of great abilities to do things, or even the pride of humility. That makes sense? I'm so humble, I'm proud of it. That's another one. The pride of wealth, it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam, that pride is the most attaching form in the material world. That's the hardest one to get rid of, because people seek that as a sense of power, as a sense of control, as a sense of enjoyment. So therefore, this form of attachment is the greatest illusion, or the greatest form of material bondage. But therefore, one who engages wealth in the service of the Lord always will never find themselves in this position of poverty. Makes sense? It's true, because Krishna always arranges for his devotees to get whatever they need to live nicely or execute their means or needs in the process of devotional service. So therefore, a devotee understands wealth, yes, it has value, it has a purpose. Let me take what I need to keep body and soul together and to offer whatever. And Prabhupada was saying, I was listening to Prabhupada, says if you're very wealthy, and some people according to their karma, or according to, you know, it's according to their karma, have excess wealth. And there's nothing wrong in being rich. It's wrong to being attached to riches. That's the bondage. So Prabhupada was saying that simply if you have much wealth, build a temple for Krishna. Serve Krishna by doing such a wonderful service that by your wealth, so many others become, what we say, they get a chance to become Krishna conscious. So wealth is very, very, very important in spreading Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada would always be eager to get wealth in order to use to spread Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada would criticize these yogis who somehow or other have this idea that, you know, it's material. Anything in this material world should be rejected and seen as a form of bondage. So Prabhupada would say, the person would say, oh, no, I cannot touch, this is material. And Prabhupada said, no, come on. You bring, and we will use it for Krishna. He also said something really interesting. This is kind of humorous. He said, my money is my money, and your money is my money. That was Prabhupada. What he was saying, that everything belongs to Krishna, and as Krishna's representative, I'm the person that will use it in the best possible way. So this attachment to wealth is a very strong form of bondage, and it keeps one's consciousness away from full surrender. In fact, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first canto, second chapter, it describes that there are two very, what we say, monolithic, very powerful forms of attachment in this material world that causes even great souls to fall from the process of bhakti. And that is attachment to wealth and attachment to the opposite sex. So it's not that we don't interact, but when attachment develops for the sake of enjoyment and sense gratification, it becomes a source of bondage. And it makes one forget about Krishna. So therefore, our devotee knows that one should, that whatever wealth comes by the grace of the Lord, one can use it for the service of the Lord and take enough to live nicely. The Prabhupada didn't say you have to be poor. Poverty is another form of suffering. This is also mentioned here. To be in a poverty-stricken condition means that one has to struggle in order to maintain whatever one needs to live nicely. Therefore, one cannot focus properly on the process of bhakti because mind is diverted simply to maintain. So either way, so a devotee always thinks, you know, Krishna has sent this, let me take what I need, therefore I'll use whatever I can in the service of the Lord. It says there's three things you should be satisfied with and three things you should never be satisfied with. Are you ready? Okay. Which one should I say first? Satisfied with? Okay. You should be satisfied with wife, food, money. Okay? Simple. In other words, you know, it, by Krishna's arrangement, you have these things, just be satisfied. That's all. Three things you should never be satisfied with: chanting the holy names of the Lord, glorifying the Lord by speaking his pastimes and activities, and giving in charity. It also says that. So this is mentioned in Niti Shastra. This is not, you know, pure Shastra, but this is practical understanding. And these practical tips help us to support our bhakti. It helps us to engage in devotional service without getting deviated by these smaller activities in life. So this is important to understand. So wealth. Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, is always inclined to give whatever the devotee needs, and sometimes more. So when the Lord is pleased by devotional service, Lakshmi comes like that. It comes automatically. One doesn't have to struggle unnecessarily for monetary stability in life. Okay. Any questions? Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna. It's on, we can hear.
He actually went against his instruction. Mm-hmm. So now we fast forward it. We're in Kali Yuga. Mm-hmm. So this is our situation here. Mm-hmm. We're in a situation where we are taught that you have to have full faith with Guru and Krishna. Mm-hmm. And all the mysteries of the Vedas will be revealed to you. So when in Kali Yuga, because it's very tricky. The Sukracharya actually quoted the Vedas right when he was giving instructions. So when in Kali Yuga can a disciple give up or take away, go against his guru's instruction?
I think the question is not when can, but what is the situation which forces one to do that?
Okay, that's the better one. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And this is what we have here. Although your point is nicely addressed in many of the purports, that one should always have full faith and obedience in the guidance and the instructions of the spiritual master, it's mentioned. In this case, the spiritual master was acting against the principles of devotion to the Lord. In other words, the Lord was encouraging Bali to surrender. And Bali was inclined to serve the Lord. So the answer to the question is, when the spiritual master no longer represents the interest of the Lord, then he is considered to be fallen, or he's acting outside of his position. So in this, Prabhupada makes this point in these verses that the spiritual master is supposed to bring one to the Lord, but when the Lord comes and asks for surrender, and he says, don't surrender. This is the situation you have here. So it's kind of an exceptional situation. If the spiritual master says, don't follow the four regulative principles, and that means that he's not following his spiritual master, or Srila Prabhupada. So then he becomes asara. Asara means useless. He loses his ability to guide and engage others. So there's a responsibility on both sides. Does that help? Thank you. Okay, yes. There's Prabhu in the back.
Thank you, Maharaj, for a very wonderful class and for your answer. I'd just like to tack on one little point. That is at the very end of the, either of this chapter or the next, but it's at the very end where there's a conversation between the Lord and Shukracharya. And at that point, and it's at the very end, the Lord asks him if he still thinks that he has done correctly, done right. And at that point, Shukracharya realizes how wrong it was, and he regrets what he has done, and he actually apologizes for what he has done. So it's interesting that he also had something to learn in this particular situation.
Yeah, but it's like when everything's taken away, you might as well surrender. Prabhupada tells the story of the grain salesman who was sitting on the side of the road, and all of a sudden a wind blows all his grains up in the air, and while they're flying in the air, he says, please accept my offering, my dear Lord. So when everything's going, what can you do? But he wasn't ready to do that before then. Yes. Any of the ladies have questions? No? Okay. Yes. Okay.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the wonderful class. My question is, a devotee who lives outside the temple, is it all right for him to aspire for a promotion in his job? Can he practice devotional service and aspire for a better standard in material existence or not? Is it antagonistic to devotional service?
I'll answer your question with a principle rather than, this way or that way. The principle is whatever is beneficial to enhance our engagement in devotional service can be accepted. And whatever is not should be, rejected, or we should avoid that. So as long as material life doesn't take away or force us to become less engaged in devotional service, we can accept these things. Because the principle is, even if you gain the whole world but you lose your soul, what's the use? The goal of life is prema pumarta mahan, to develop our love for Krishna. And to do that, we need sufficient amount of engagement in devotional service. So that's from person to person. One person may be different than another person, depending on the situation. And therefore, the question comes back to the spiritual guide. How best I can use my time and energy, both in my practical life and in my spiritual life. So that question can be asked to one's personal guide. Thank you. Yes, in the back there. You're next. Okay.
Maharaj, so in the story of Bali Maharaj, I was always curious about the internal manifestation of this bhakti from Bali towards the Vamana. So here we know we hear the story of Bali Maharaj, you know, going through so much effort to become the ruler of the world, you know, and we know about him as a demon. So now he is there, the sacrifice, and all of a sudden he seems to have like a change of heart, right? He is consciously making a step towards offering things to, you know, to Vamanadeva, and he's being cautioned about it. So when that change of heart is happening, and what becomes the cause of it?
Well, it's always known that he was very charitable. And that was his good quality. And the Lord took advantage of that quality in order to bring him to the point of surrender. He came from a family of Prahlad Maharaj, was his. And Prahlad Maharaj was also considered to be the king of the daityas, the king of the demons. When he took the throne, he was defined as the king of the demons, although he was a pure devotee of the Lord. But he came from that lineage, that family. So Bali was also from the same family like that. But he had this tendency of charitableness. And that was his good quality. And that brought him to full surrender to the Lord. So much so that the Lord actually became his personal servant by giving him a place in one lower planet called Sutala, where he would have his own planet. And the Lord would be his personal servant by opening the door for him. So everything changed. See, this is the point is, as soon as you surrender, the Lord doesn't care what you were in the past. As soon as you surrender, your whole life changes. Vibhishan, he was born also in a demoniac family, the brother of Ravana. But as soon he changed, and as soon as he came, Ram said he should be seen just like any of you, as one of my servants. He should not be seen in the past of what he was. So this is also very instructive. We don't look at a devotee's past and say, oh, they were like this or like that. We see what they're doing now or what they're trying to do now. So Bali Maharaj had that change of heart, and therefore he became glorious. There's so many examples like that. Yes, Prabhu.
All right, thank you for your wonderful class and answers to these questions. But we don't see you very often here, so maybe you could say something about your personal movements and what's happening. Last time I saw you was in Croatia.
Yeah,
if you can say something about, you know, what you're up to.
Well, we had kirtan in Croatia together, didn't we? What am I up to? Oh, boy. This is being broadcast, you know. Might be somebody I know out there that doesn't want to know, shouldn't know these things. So I don't know what I'm supposed to say, but all I can think of is that we're preaching in the prisons around the world, and it's actually growing quite nicely. So prison preaching is expanding more and more and more and more. Inmates are seriously chanting Hare Krishna and actually, you know, reading Prabhupada's books. And that's the main thing. They really have a sense of Prabhupada through his books. Prabhupada's books are so powerful. Change people's lives overnight just by getting Prabhupada's books. So that's so wonderful to see when people who are in that position, they just come in contact with Prabhupada's books and their whole life is transformed. And they're chanting, they're reading, they're also writing and writing essays on Prabhupada's books, doing artwork, whatever they can do. And also preaching to their fellow inmates like that. So there are many examples of this, and it's expanding more and more like that. Yes, Subhas Prabhu.
Hi, Raj. Thank you for a wonderful discourse.
Hare Krishna.
You just mentioned prisons. Can you put Bhagavatam sets in prisons?
You can do it in the prison libraries.
I'd like to offer you that opportunity. Can you place them? We'll pay for them. LA Temple supply.
Wonderful.
Srimad Bhagavatam sets.
Okay, we'll make some arrangements to go into the libraries, see we need a letter. The letter is an introduction to the books by explaining a little bit about the books and asking the librarians to place them in there.
So you have some devotees that do that, or?
We can arrange it, yeah.
Yeah, if you can arrange it, then we'll supply it, because we don't have the manpower to do that. But
there is one very enthusiastic lady who's working in Alachua, Mother Bhakti Lata. She was trained by Mother Shyamapriya. Shyamapriya, I think, was in this area. She was in San Diego. Yeah. So she's doing full-time preaching in prisons, books, letters, and arranging, you know, inmates to get Shastric tests. So she's one of the main persons, but there are others. And also in Croatia. In Croatia, we actually have permission to put all of Prabhupada's books in every jail in Croatia. So that was a real landmark victory. A letter was written, they accepted it, and they said, whatever books you have, we'll accept into the libraries. So, but I think you just have English books here. So, but they also speak English there. So we can do that, yeah.
So please connect with me, let me know who and what I got to do.
Yeah, this is wonderful. Thank you. This is a great, great service. Thank you. Okay. And it's very rarely they get the chance to get Bhagavatam. So this would be, you know, this would take it up on a higher step as far as their knowledge. Thank you. Do we have enough time to continue? Okay, so we'll speak after class, yes. In some cases, yeah. In some cases, they continue to write the devotees who are preaching to them. In other cases, they disappear. So it's hard, because one of the, when we say features of prison life, is when you go in there, you can't wait to get out and make up for lost time. So even though many of them become devotees, still they still have that interest to try to do a little more material, you know, happiness like that. So in some cases it's not like that, but in many cases it is. So we try to keep contact, you know, try to inspire them to read the books and also visit temples. It's hard for them to come to a temple, and it's also hard for temples to accept them, because, you know, they're a little difficult to deal with sometimes, because prison environment changes a person really, you know, they become very, you know, it's hard. So we've tried many things to create halfway houses and to arrange for temples to accept them, but it's really difficult to do it on both sides. And the other thing is, usually when they get out, they're in parole, and parole means that they have to stay in the state that they get paroled out. So they can't travel, usually for a couple of years. So we stay, for some, we stay in contact by letters like that, and sometimes they visit the temples. And we ask the temples to somehow or other, you know, find someone to meet them and take care of them like that. So it requires that kind of attention. It's difficult when they get out, you know. A lot of challenges for them. Yeah. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bhavo.
Hey, well. So happy to see you.
Huh? I've been living here for 2 years.